And welcoming you, dear listeners. Good morning, good morning, good morning to the sound this particular Sunday morning session here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And this is my Sunday morning take here for this, particularly, wherever you find yourself. Obviously it'll be chilly. It is particularly chilly this morning, but that obviously just gives us the indicator for us to know that when 1 June comes about, you know, we don't get surprises. We, you know, gradually developed into this particular seasonal change that is expected to occur in or at the end of this month, in the new month of June. If you guys can remember back, specifically those living here in Windhoek, in the capital, that the situation changed so quickly last year. I mean, 30 up to 30 May, you know, we were still going, you know, like, you know, hunky dory. The weather still feels fine. Everything feels okay. Yay. And literally when it became 1 June, a cold front hit through. And then ultimately we had like the whole June, which was the month of nightmare and, severe cold in most cases. That lasted up until October last year specifically, because South Africa still continued to experience cold fronts and even the phenomena of snowfall during what was supposed to be their warming up months in their seasonal changes. So, nonetheless, dear listeners, if you have woken up or if you have been awake, you know, flowing in the transition from before 5 a.m. into now, my Sunday morning take, which, you'll be in my company of from 5 a.m. up until 7 a.m. Good morning. Welcome to your Sunday morning programming. Obviously, I'll be here up until 7 a.m., but then there's the rest of your programming to follow on after that. Good morning and stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company. Now, as we've always done here on my Sunday morning take, on your Sunday mornings specifically, we take a look always at history, or everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science in between, and a little bit of everything else, you know, to cover all the particular gaps in our subject matter, as we always do here on my Sunday morning take. Now, this particular Sunday morning is one that actually covers a particular discussion that is not really looked at. And that's even in an urban context, and as much also in the broader global discussions around the world, because in the realm specifically of looking at true economic analysis of the impacts of certain particular policies and developments coming through, not just in Namibia, but across the world, you've got to ask yourself a whole bunch of questions. You know, what particular impacts does it have on various particular developments specifically that contribute to said particular activity? Historically, most of these particular discussions always have an element of one major component being literally the driving force of the particular event taking place. For example, if you want me to, you know, to now specify, to get into the specifics of our, which is going to be you know, the gist of our discussion for this morning. When you get into the specifics, for example, if you look at the overall trade discussion across the world and the realm of trade, and this has also been the discussions that I've had since last month when I did the particular sort of like, the archaeological discovery of the Bom Jesus, that was discovered, in about the vicinity of Oranjemund. If you guys don't know about the Bom Jesus is more than 500 years old. It's a shipwreck that was discovered on Namibian shores, and it had been given to Namibia specifically by the Portuguese because they said, you know, let that be an archaeological, a key archaeological and historical and heritage-based, discovery for Namibia, which technically ties Namibia and Portugal, because it has predominantly, because, you know, we do have direct linkages and experience and interactions with the Portuguese over the course of history. So when you look at that particular discussion, on one side, yeah, the archaeology, the historical relevance and the particular discussions in terms of, you know, what this means for not just the bilateral relations between Namibia and Portugal, but also what it explains in terms of, you know, Namibia's particular role in the world of maritime. Maritime obviously pertaining towards, you know, seafaring exercises. Now, our discussion today, dear listeners, is one such based upon maritime and, to be specific, maritime trade, because as of April, which was literally last month, wherein Donald Trump had announced his, Liberation Day announcement. If you don't know what Liberation Day is, it is literally canonized. Canonization specifically means it, you know, someone has gone and made it a major particular event in history to reference in human history. Hence the reason why it's known as, hence the reason why I use the term canonized. So it was literally canonized. So since Liberation Day, which obviously happened in last month, which was in April, one particular development has obviously happened, and this has been that trade around the world has been impacted specifically because of the announcement that, you know, that Donald Trump made. Now, Liberation Day happened on 2 April last month, and it was the particular development wherein Donald Trump announced, you know, tariffs to the rest of the world. One particular media commentator that I watched recently in the course of this past week, she's not from CNN, she's from MSNBC, and she asked the question specifically that America has now impacted global trade to such an extent that these countries, almost 100, 150 of them, don't know, you know, what they've got now to do. And I'm just giving you the small explainer. And she highlighted specifically that in one of her discussions with experts, not just that being economic experts, but also research experts, she asked the question specifically in terms of, you know, what does this ultimately look like for the global trade discussion? And every expert that she's asked that question in different formats or in different, you know, flavors also. And each of the particular participants in her discussions have highlighted in it, they give her more or less the same response. More countries specifically are sending less of what the United States needs for a plethora of its industries, even if it's from food retail to overall industrial uses, less of what is needed for the American economy to function is being imported. This leads to the ports, the major trading ports of the United States. The term they use is running dry, meaning less cargo ships are coming in, the less cargo ships are docking. And remember, dear listeners, a cargo ship docking leads to not just the delivery of the items that are being imported, but also leads to particular port incomes and revenues being generated, because now you've got sailors that would like to, you know, they would like to, what's the word they would like to, you know, get off from the boat, be able to stretch their legs and buy supplies because they are sailors and they are still, you know, technically foreigners in most cases. And in other cases, they would like to spend money in the local economy where this port facility is after they've done their deliveries, specifically to, you know, have supplies of various particular items. So because they know they've got to probably move on to their next destination. But the most crucial thing is that the ship has docked and that it has unloaded its particular cargo consignment, or, you know, its cargo meant for that particular port and that particular economy. In most cases, they also receive cargo to take back, because I had to explain, was it to Helmut earlier in this week, that a ship, a cargo ship, just like a freight truck, you know, a long distance freight truck, you can't go there, you know, with your cargo, drop off, and then you come back empty. Does not happen. It doesn't happen. You've got to come back with something, and you've got to take the next consignment, because your role is to courier the particular, you know, cargo between two port facilities, which are technically two economies in most cases. You've got to do that. So while these guys are obviously waiting, there might be cargo that they have to load up and take in a different direction. Now, at the heart of this particular discussion, dear listeners, the whole world has forgotten specifically how crucial and important port or maritime trading is to the global economy. I've got two particular pieces of literature here with me. Actually three, but the first two actually are, you know, they are researched in-depth particular knowledge bases or knowledge silos in their own right. And both of them echo one particular statement. Maritime trade, speaks towards the aspect of, seafaring, being on the sea. Maritime trade is the single most important, largest contributor to global trade, because specifically 80% of the world's trade is being facilitated by maritime trade. 80%, let me say that statement again. It's not 50%, it's not airplanes, it's not trains, it's not trucks, it's not cars, it's not delivery vehicles, it's cargo ships. 80% of the world's trade is facilitated by ocean-faring cargo ships, or in other cases, for example, if you're like in Europe or in Asia or in South America, the river transport network systems wherein cargo ships also operate on them. They call them barges. They don't call them cargo ships in that scenario. Just for you to understand, a barge is a little bit bigger. Specifically, agreement between the Namibia Ports Authority and the Rotterdam Port, should actually give you an insight if you ever go look at, you know, what does the Rotterdam Port actually do, what are their expertise and some of the particular developments that they've done. The Rotterdam Port, in most cases, they facilitate up river and down river trade into the rest of Europe. And that is specifically some of the particular things that you've got to know, because river systems do actually operate as trade facilitators as well in most economies, which is predominantly in Western Europe, in the United States, in South America, because there's obviously a lot of big rivers in South America. And I just don't know what goes on in Africa and specifically in Asia, where they do have river systems as well. Now, before we continue, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take a short musical break. From the musical break, we're going to come back and head to the rest of our discussion here on your number one talk radio station. This is My Sunday Morning Take. And once again, good morning. I do hope you've got a cup of coffee in your hand. If you're not a coffee drinker, let it be something warm to warm you up. And specifically, you're in my company all the way from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m.
Static white noise, submerged, no choice. just this reckless mind, wasting time. Lost every time that I fought. With a mind full of madness and a heart full of sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of misses, all I've never finished, the person I'll never be. Just stones and clients, way hard on this mind, pushing on doors that won't open. I found out any meditation, I'll breathe into the air right now. It's just this mixed up mind, wasting time. What if my decisions end out with a mind full of madness and a heart sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of this is all I've never finished, the person I'll never be. With a mind full of madness and a heart full of sadness, I'll go wherever you lead. With a head full of this is all I've never finished, the person I'll never. Congratulations, or to hear the crowd applaud. It's just this reckless mind, wasting time. Lost every time that I fought. With a mind full of madness. With a
searching for the songs to play. Then you listen to the music and you like to sing along. You want to get the meaning out of each and every song. Then you find yourself a message and some words to call your own and take them home. Begin to flicker and the sound is getting dim. The voice begins to falter and the crowds are getting thin. But he never seems to notice, he's just got to find another place to play.
People.
If you ever wanted a breakup song, sometimes, guys, you know, just go look at some of the older classics that obviously, you know, came from the 80s and the 90s. And ultimately, it does sort of like give you a little bit of a relaxation. But well, back then, you know, they had literally lyrics that you could sing along to, as opposed to most cases today where you don't even know what the person's trying to say. But anyway, getting you into the rest of our discussion for this morning, dear listeners. Welcome. Good morning. If you've just woken up, I do hope you've got a cup of coffee. If not, have something warm in your hands, ultimately, you know, just to sip on while you're obviously listening and being in my company for the rest of this particular session of my Sunday morning take from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Now, where we left off just before the break, dear listeners, has been about the particular important impact that obviously maritime trade has on the global economy. Now, maritime trade in its own right is that, if you look at it, it is a very, very important particular mechanism because it ultimately does, facilitate overall global trade to happen. So if we're talking about overall global trade, we're literally talking about you getting your nice particular products in your shops, at your regular shopping venues, on time, every time, consistently. Because one of the particular key important things has been that maritime trade, maritime trade actually facilitates another particular sort of like thinking that you've also got to include, which is one that the demand for port traffic, meaning the installation of ports and harbors and these particular facilities, is derived from global trade. So in order for trade to happen between two countries, I mean, it's just one of the particular sort of like follow-on developments that you always see happen, which is one of the particular reasons as to why you've seen in many cases the developments like in Namibia has been about the Namport facilities at Walvis and at Lüderitz being, you know, coming specifically under scrutiny in terms of that they have to play a more particular important strategic role in Namibia's particular global economic participatory role in the aspects of upgrading them with either storage facility expansion or other particular technological installations being positioned close to the port facility so that the port facility can have as much economic participation or allow for as much economic participation to be conducted through it. But you don't just build things at a port and then hope the port just works. Because in most cases, obviously, you need the cargo ships actually to be able to dock or to be allowed to dock at your port facility. Right? Right. Now, the demand for port traffic is derived from global trade, which has undergone a wide range of economic, technological, and geopolitical developments. Shifts in global trade, production, maritime shipping, transport systems, and logistics are ultimately affecting port activity levels and operations. One of the particular strategic things is that, like in Namibia's context, that Namibia has done, dear listeners, has been that we have this particular strategic goal, which is something very well that the Ministry of Works and Transport, obviously, I would rather comment that they are happy that this particular strategy has occurred, because the real implementers of the strategy are the entities, for example, like the Walvis Bay Corridor Group, the Namibia Ports Authority, Transnamib on the other side, and obviously the trucking companies, where they all know they've got to channel traffic into and out of the port facilities in Namibia. If you don't know what the Corridor Group actually stands for, it strategically stands specifically for that the Port of Walvis Bay has to operate as a transport corridor into the rest of SADC. into the rest of Sadek. Listen to that term, dear listeners. Into the rest of Sadek. So we now know that specifically this has happened. So when you look at these particular discussions, and when you look at specifically the developments that are associated and thus positioned around some of the particular these particular developments, you then get to see a clearer picture of what the jigsaw puzzle tries to achieve. Now, the jigsaw puzzle is, how do you allow trade to be, or how do you actually entice? Because this is a game also of enticement. How do you entice trade to be that economic game changer for your country? Develop it up and ultimately allow as many participation or as wide a range of participation from your local population in this aspect of trade. That is ultimately how maritime trade actually comes about. Now, you've got to look at maritime trade ultimately in terms of the 80% statement that I made a little bit earlier. Why? Well, because a lot, to be honest, cargo ships are the best means by which to transport a whole bunch of heavy equipment and large volumes of items to and from destinations. Yes, a train can also do the same. Yes, maybe a freight truck can also do the same. But remember, for every, let's say, possibly two containers that a freight truck can load, two at most, I've only seen at most two trailers on a freight truck, a cargo ship can ultimately carry close to 100. I'll say it again, close to 100. So thus has ultimately made the use of cargo ships has become the single most important investment in the global economy for the global economy to function. Let me say that again. A cargo ship is the best investment. It's close to being almost like a government bond, because that ultimately is what cargo ships are. Without them, trade cannot happen. Now, maritime shipping is considered a driver of the globalization or the global trade or the global interconnected trade elements of the world, which has ultimately been what, when I started off in the discussion this morning, what most of the media commentators in the United States are ultimately hammering on. And believe you me, guys, they are hammering these particular developments of Donald Trump. They are not letting up on Donald Trump. In most cases, I feel sorry for Donald Trump, because it's the same particular critique and analysis and scrutiny that he underwent back in his first term. And his first term ended on a bang. And the scrutiny was literally the size of Mount Everest, which is the highest peak on planet Earth. But today, in 2025, after his inauguration on 20 January, it has not been kind to the guy. Hence the reason why I say I sometimes feel sorry. Not all the time, I sometimes feel sorry for the guy. It has been brutal. But the brutal scrutiny and the brutal critique has come from sound reasoning. You look at sound reasoning with reality based decision making, or decision making that impacts the realities. So I'll highlight this next particular step. And this is not a discussion about Donald Trump, just so that you know that, dear listeners. This is ultimately highlighting the developments that have taken place there in global trade, partly and as anecdotes in our discussion for today. What are we looking at? Now, when I said maritime shipping is a driver of globalization, which it is, because 80% of the particular trade globally is conducted by sea, you know, it is transported by sea, you need to understand what this ultimately means. Now, global economic integration is a key factor behind the rising significance of international trade. Historically, trade was prevalent, but it was set up under constrained conditions, in terms specifically of the technical means to actually support it. You will get such an explainer, for example, like the discussion I had last year about the Benin bronzes or the cultural expropriation that has obviously taken place under colonialism, specifically has been this notion of, can I trade between this point where I'm standing and that other point where I wish to deliver the items that have been bought, sourced, or ultimately has been paid for by another particular person, which can be deemed as the customer in that regard. Now, the constrained conditions or the constraints that are placed historically on trade scenarios have always been a scenario of, what do you have that I want? Or, I don't want to trade with you because, you know, historically, I don't like you. Or, what can you contribute to me that I would find as an advantage to me? These questions are still relevant. These questions still persist in the global trade discussion and agenda in Namibia, even on the African continent. But here's one of the key particular things that has always impressed me. Remember when I mentioned that particular corridor, the transport corridor that Namibia has installed on the ground, which ultimately is a boon to the Ministry of Works and Transport, because it makes them look good. Hence the reason why I said it's a boon to them. It makes them look good. When you look, because there are implementers and direct involved stakeholders and parties with on the ground in that regard. When you look at, for example, the aspect of the Walvis Bay corridor, the philosophy of it, it is a philosophy that allows our neighbor Botswana, our neighbor Zambia, our neighbor Zimbabwe potentially, and other particular landlocked African countries and zones and territories to channel traffic through Namibia. To channel traffic through Namibia. To allow them to have the opportunity of participating or getting into one of the world's largest transport lanes. If you don't know, the world's oldest and one of the most still active transport lanes, maritime transport lanes, runs past us here along the African coast, the West African coast, which we are on. The oldest one runs past here. Historically, this has been proven even with the archaeological find of the Bom Jesus in Oranjemund back in 2008. Look at it. That means that for hundreds of years, almost for half a millennium, dear listeners, not just European shipping, because that is a shipping corridor. Remember that. Namibia has been part of the maritime trade and expedition and discovery discussion in human history. Namibia has been part of it. Namibia has been part of it. Now, trading over long distances obviously remains slow, and it is obviously has a cost element associated to it, which ultimately limits its scale and obviously also its scope. By the early 20th century, transport technologies such as the steamship became ubiquitous and efficient enough to support the emergence of complex international trade systems. Because the complexity of global trade back then, with wind power being the discussion. And I mean, wind power is the greenest form of transport that you can ever think about. But on average, it took you 3 months to get, because as the technology in the amount of sales, because the thinking was always have more sales so that you have more power. The more sales you have should obviously be associated to the speed that you can go at. But then the engineers, which were known as shipwrights, you know, the guys that built the ships back then, the shipwrights, because a shipwright had to use wood, you know, to build a ship, they then also realized something else. Wood is a bit brittle. We need something else. And they realized that wood is a finite resource for building ships, you know, boats. And then they obviously developed the steamboat and all those other particular things. For example, in the American Civil War, the steamship came about as, you know, being used as well, which ultimately led to the first known particular iron boat being used with a steam engine. It was close to being the first submarine, but it was not submersible, meaning it couldn't dive, and it was just a floating iron fortress with a lot of cannon on it. The downside of ultimately of what that led to is that the steamboat was limited, because you have fire on a boat and it actually propelled you forward. And in some cases still, the use of wind power was still used, because if you try to chart a long distance, the discussion is obviously you need to use a combination of both particular sources of power. Ultimately, the technology became more efficient, the sails were then completely abandoned, and it led primarily to the use of the propeller with the steam engine. What is a propeller? A propeller is underwater. It looks like it's a blade, it's a thing with three or four blades on it, and it's used in the aspects of reverse and advancing a forward particular movement for the steamboat or for the ship. Now, the steamship steamboat discussion obviously has had its improvements, because now everyone around the world realize, we can get there faster. We can get from 3 months worth of being on the sea, we can now get there within a month. Now, obviously that technology became a lot more advanced, became quicker, longer distances can be traveled. It has obviously led to the particular development of nuclear submarines in that regard, because what does a nuclear submarine do? The only thing that ultimately forces a nuclear submarine to surface or to dock is because the humans on the submarine need food and they need to stretch their legs a little bit, you know. They need to see sunshine and all those other particular developments. And this has been as the technology has moved about or has improved. Now, at the same time as well, the steamship also enabled economies of scale that could not have been achieved beforehand. However, it was not until the mid-20th century that the global regulatory regime became open enough to allow an expanded form of globalization. Now, global trade is impossible without transportation. Let me say that again. Global trade is impossible without transportation. This has ultimately been the problem in the African continent, for landlocked countries. Even in South America, this has been the problem for landlocked countries. Because if you don't have a port facility, you can't be able to trade. But then there's also this particular weird instance that also exists. There are African countries on this continent. Yes, because some of them are not on the continent, just so that you know. The likes of Madagascar, Cabo Verde, Sao Tome and Principe. You know, I can go on with the list particularly. There are African countries on this continent that do not have port facilities. They do not have adequate port facilities. They do not have the scale, nor the investment opportunity, or the size to pay off even loans as a country to facilitate the necessary developments to upgrade port facilities. I'll say this again. There are countries like that on this continent that don't have these particular capabilities. They just don't have it. Now, ultimately, transportation thus becomes an efficient key trade facilitator. Transportation becomes a key trade facilitator. You cannot think about trade without identifying that transport has to be present. By definition, almost all cargo carried by maritime shipping is considered to be international trade. But active internal trade is present in countries with long coastlines. The United States, Brazil, China, Namibia, South Africa, Angola, not Nigeria. I think we've got a larger coastline than Nigeria. Madagascar, for that matter. And when you look at these particular things, you also have to identify archipelagic countries like Japan, Indonesia, the Philippines. I'll also throw once again Madagascar in there. Transport costs, both freight costs and time costs, constitute a key component of total trade costs. These trade costs also include other costs incurred in getting goods to final users beyond the marginal cost of producing the good itself, such as policy barriers, information costs, legal and regulatory costs that also facilitate into this particular discussion. Lower trade costs contribute to trade growth, as it has been underlined that for developing economies,
You just got added to the GoTV Best Football Friends chat group. Let's go!
Final.
It's finals time, and all the biggest players are in it to win it. Catch every Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Champions League, FA Cup, Europa League, Conference League. To cut the long voice note short, you know we'll be there for you when you need to watch the finals. Stay connected to catch all the biggest football finals with your best football friend, GoTV. Love it.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental.
Coming back there from the particular ad break, and ultimately also the particular discussion, and you know, that we had just before the break, the key thing that you've got to highlight here is, dear listeners, that global trade specifically cannot take place, or country cannot participate in global trade without the opportunity of having sufficient or efficient transport installations in it. Now, lower trade costs obviously contribute to trade growth, as it has been underlined, specifically for developing economies, because a 10% reduction in transportation costs was associated with a 20% growth in international trade. A direct correlation being identified there. If you try to lower the reduction in transportation costs, it contributes to a 20% growth globally around the world. Because thus, it ultimately means, in most cases, that most of these particular developing countries then have the opportunity of accessing greater volumes of commerce to their shores or to their port facilities. But distance has always been the factor, guys, because distance has always been the discussion in terms of how you get from one point to another. That ultimately led to the particular developments, for example, like the Suez Canal, and the Panama Canal being developed, because in many cases, for example, like with the Panama Canal discussion that I also did here on the My Sunday Morning Take, is that it was a French company that came up with the idea, like it was a French company that also came up with the idea for the Suez Canal, also for the Panama Canal, but then in the Suez Canal discussion, it was both the French and the British governments that built, developed, and ultimately owned the particular infrastructure of the Suez Canal up until Egypt's independence, which was in the 1950s. And that ultimately led to a particular international war, because the British actually instigated the Israelis to fight against the Egyptians because of the Suez Canal. But all the Egyptians wanted with their first president was that the Suez Canal is their infrastructure. You cannot have independence and the Suez Canal of global trade belongs to a company sitting in London, registered in Paris, owned by two European powers. That is not how specifically the aspects in terms of economic development is done, where ownership of certain particular resources are kept somewhere else. Now, this, if you don't know about that particular conflict, I've also spoken about it, but you can always read it up for your own particular interest, is that specifically you do see what this leads to, because Egypt realized that they need to benefit from the trade volumes of trade running through their country. I mean, any person would ask that question. How do we not make any particular revenue as a country for trade that is not stopping in our country, running through our country, not being leveraged to our benefit? Any country would ask that. Any citizens, policymakers would ask those questions. How do we not make money from this particular activity? You obviously don't want to do a Mozambique. Just so that you know, you don't want to do a Mozambique. But the important thing has been here that you've obviously got to look at how important trade infrastructure plays in terms of the participation of the country into global trade. Now, as mentioned, distance factor has played a lesser role, but in most cases it was the biggest role that it could, or the biggest, you know, factor that was playing a role in international trade in the earliest forms of maritime trade, because in the intensity of maritime trade relations, this actually makes the capacity and direct connectivity of maritime shipping networks more relevant, known as shipping lanes. Now, international trade influences the structure of maritime shipping networks, which are organized according to a hierarchy in most cases, where the most important shipping routes are related to the most important trips in most important trade relations. Now, since the end of the Second World War, ongoing trade liberalism has also led to the gradual removal of political, regulatory, and cultural obstacles to trade, specifically because these are some of the constraints that persisted before World War II. Obviously, whatever built up to World War II was a world that was, it was a very fractious world. But before we continue, dear listeners, we're actually going to take a short musical break, and we're going to come back from that.
just how much I care. I've been looking for you, doing all I can, and work all the time to make me a man. Oh, I forgot to be your lover, and I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Oh,
Ain't no peace at the top. I don't know how much air I got. I will never get used to it. Cause it ain't what it seems. And don't nobody check on me. It's a slow way to go all alone. How you get lonely even though you're surrounded by the ones you know? Killing myself saying these words. There's a hurting deep down in my soul, but I learned not to let it show. Do I need him? No. There's a price I'ma pay for hiding feelings I don't say. Keep my cool or lose my way. Try to talk to the wind, but just can't pretend. I'm a man without a friend. How you get lonely even though you're surrounded by the ones you know? Killing myself saying these words. By the ones you know, killing myself, saying these words. There's a hurt deep down in my soul, but I learned never let it show. Do I need help? No, no, no.
Right there were the sounds of Leon Bridges with Blue Mesas, and that ultimately brings us about 17 minutes past the hour of 6. Ultimately, you're in my company of my Sunday Morning Take, which runs from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday morning here on your number one talk radio station, and ultimately being Eagle FM. Well, if you've just woken up, dear listeners, good morning, good morning, good morning. If I do hope that you woke up with at least a little bit of a warm drink in your close proximity. If not, you know, go and get one. As we've been covering the particular importance of, maritime trade in the global, economic discussion of the world, and specifically of the global trade discussion, it has obviously highlighted the particular importance that trade plays, or maritime trade plays in the economic advancements of any country in the world. The key particular factors are, dear listeners, is that the collapse of the Soviet Union, the opening up of China in the 1990s, represented landmark events that incited the entry of close to 2 billion consumers as well as related labor and natural resources into the global economy. Regional trading blocs have been formed with differing trade liberalization levels, such as NAFTA, which has obviously been, which actually became the USMCA in North America, and that USMCA has now been subsequently been ripped up again by Trump, just so that you know, because the USMCA was his idea, but when he came back, he threw the whole agreement once again in the dustbin, and he's now trying the same antics that he did in his first term, he's doing now again. The European single market system in Europe, the ASEAN trading bloc in Southeast Asia, Mercosur in South America, the ECOWAS in West Africa, and so forth. Now, an important share of international trade occurs within these economic blocks. So there is trade moving in internally first, especially the EU and the USMCA, which rely more on land transport modes such as road and rail. The European Union and the USMCA are considered the world's most integrated trade agreements, with 61% and 51% of their respective trade concerning member nations. For ASEAN, that is now the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, 75% of its trade concerns nations outside of the agreement, implying a greater relative share of maritime shipping. Now, the globalization of production is a driver for the globalization of trade, as they are interrelated. Let me say that again. The globalization of production is a driver of the globalization of trade, just like maritime shipping is the is literally the facilitator of global trade. Now, the scale, the volume, the efficiency of international trade have all continued to improve. They've all continued to grow. They've all continued to expand, and they've all continued to show positive developments in that regard. Obviously, with the caveat of the COVID pandemic, which ultimately saw the imbalances starkly being generated because of lockdown protocols and regulations across the world. So what happened? So what ultimately happened, you would be asking? What happened specifically was that one keynote particular discussion occurred wherein all or most of the cargo ships between the US economy and the Chinese economy were stuck on the Chinese side because of lockdown protocols and regulations. And a lot of the containers in the world that facilitate the transportation of products, goods, and goods and services across the world were scattered and stuck in a lot of ports around the world. Now, this ultimately led to imbalances and specifically the shipping, the shipping discussion and storage discussion falling flat. Obviously, because of the pandemic, not a lot of things could move. The downside from this was specifically that when the pandemic subsided, now you had to try and stimulate activity so that it comes back to its normal activities of pre-COVID levels, as, you know, the analysts keep referencing pre-COVID levels continuously. So it is easier specifically for tourism to try and get back to that level, because it's, in most cases, it just means that you need more people to just, you know, buy into tourism plans across the world, and then they fly, and then you get the destinations connecting once again. The downside of the shipping lane discussion of things is, or maritime transport, should I rather say, is you've now got to source, and the first thing that you specifically need is you need someone on one side to place an order somewhere, and then the order has to be substantial for example, like I said, and here's the weird thing. The analysis that I watched, because it was done in a discussion, highlighted that the cargo ships were mostly stuck in China, and a lot of them were also stuck on the US coast, the eastern US coast. No, not the eastern. The western U.S. coast, the one where you have Los Angeles, Seattle at the top. Is it Seattle? Yeah, Seattle at the top. San Diego also just close to Los Angeles. And the downside was you needed guys on both sides of China and the U.S. to now start placing orders with each other again so the cargo ships can be filled and then the cargo ships can move. Right? Right. That ultimately was a very long thing that had to be sort of like nurtured back into movement again. So it takes off, it kicks off, and they commence from there once again. The important thing that you've got to look at is ultimately how much trade takes place between various trading blocks as highlighted just now. Now, global trade liberalization is continuously supported by the evolution of the World Trade Organization, and also by initiatives by organizations such as the UNCTAD, which is the UN Conference on Trade and Development, or the World Bank as well. Because after the Second World War, a number of international corporations sought the support of intergovernmental organizations, or as I sometimes, the term that I came across, they're known as multilateral organizations, such as the UN for regulatory frameworks that ultimately enables the pursuit of international operations. Multinational corporations also assumed growing importance as investors and traders in such an environment, and intergovernmental organizations also continue to play a crucial role in shaping the rules of the game in international competition and global trade. Now, all of these particular participants have key roles to play. I mean, for the first time, specifically looking at how this global trade discussion came about, was that in most cases, it was about connecting Asia to Europe. But here's one particular unique thing that's obviously taking place today. And it's not as a counter to international maritime shipping or maritime trade. It is actually to complement it. Historically, dear listeners, if any of you know about the story of Marco Polo, and we'll do Marco Polo next week specifically, because Marco Polo is probably your first particular sort of like adventure explorer slash trader personality. Marco Polo heard, because he was a Venetian. What is a Venetian? Not Phoenician. Venetian. A Venetian is someone from the city of Venice. And back then, the Italian cities were all city-states. So they were countries based upon just the city. So Marco Polo was an Italian. And he heard a lot of stories specifically from traders stopping at the port of Venice to trade. Now, if you don't know, the port of Venice has historically played a crucial role for Europe because it was a port facility specifically that continuously was a key strategic piece of trading infrastructure, as well as also naval infrastructure for not just the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but also for the Italians, also for the previous particular sort of like whoever was in possession of the city back then before the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And it was a unique strategic settlement or urban settlement that played a crucial role in whichever way. Now, if you don't know, historically, the Mediterranean Sea has been this hub of interconnected maritime trade as old as human history. The Mediterranean Sea. I mean, the Romans, the Greeks, the Moors that were in North Africa and in Spain, even the Phoenicians, the Mesopotamians, who were the other guys? The ancient Egyptians, the Carthaginians. I mean, I can go on with the lists. You come here into the closer cycles of history, the various Barbary naval powers. They were sometimes known as the Barbary pirates. In most cases, they were just, you know, pirates that were of an Islamic origin. So, you know, throughout history, the Mediterranean Sea has been this thriving hive, this thriving hive of not just trade, but all manner of maritime activity. If you ever had to think about it, an MSP, back then in human history, what is an MSP, guys? It's a Marine Spatial Planning, concept. MSP would have been alive and well if ever such a particular policy document was developed for the Mediterranean back then. But obviously it wasn't, because it was mostly used in naval warfare or in warfare contexts, as well as also trade contexts. And trade and naval trade and naval warfare, or maritime trade and naval warfare, were closely linked to each other, because in most cases, most navies were constructed to protect trade, because they were pirates. Now, the important thing here, dear listeners, is that back in human history, it was trying to connect Europe to Asia. Then it became connecting the whole of the Northern Hemisphere, Europe, Asia, and North America. Then it became a discussion of connecting the major shipping lanes. So it was Asia to South America, from Asia to North America, from South America to Europe, Europe to Asia, Europe to North America. And so the crisscrossing happened. And it's been illustrated in this particular diagram that I've got in front of me in terms of how the connectivities, you know, developed. Now, the last particular sort of like level of things that you have to look at is sort of like the interregional trade. The Mediterranean, like I said, the Gulf of Mexico, which Trump wants to change to the Gulf of America for whatever reason, I don't know. Because it still doesn't make sense. He still hasn't motivated for what reason he wants to change it, because Mexico owns the larger coastline of that Gulf. And historically, you've got to look at why it is named the Gulf of Mexico specifically, because there is a geographical implication about it. But obviously Trump doesn't listen to academics. And the academics he does have are questionable. But anyway, the role ultimately of this particular discussion highlights to you that there is ongoing growth in international trade. It will always grow. The only time potentially that international trade would see a decline, for example, if two countries go to war, or there is major uncertainty happening in the global shipping lanes, that is when international trade would be hampered. Because as I just alluded to just before the break, or not this break, the 60, you know, when we crossed over from at the top of the hour at 6 a.m., is that literally cargo ships are the best positioned, the maritime shipping infrastructure and discussions are the best positioned ultimately to facilitate large volumes of trade, which is the norm of the game. Now, coming back, dear listeners, world trade has experienced a significant increase since the 1950s, and it continues to represent a growing share of global economic output. In 2007, the value of international trade surpassed 50% of the global GDP for the first time, and has remained between 45% and 52% ever since. This particular share was conventionally in the 20% to 25% range in the first half of the 20th century. So that's ultimately of, let's rather say from 1900 to 1950. And then in the 19th century, which is the previous century, you know, the 1800s, this share was around 10%. Now, several factors obviously explain the growth. What are these factors? Income growth, falling transport costs, trade liberalization, economic convergence, the increment in intermediate goods trades. And these are just some of the particular factors that obviously highlight this. For example, when we started with the first one, income growth linked with additional consumption of goods and services, and some of which are traded, has been one of these contributing factors. Falling transport costs allow for more options and opportunities to trade. Trade liberalization and the associated tariff rate reductions ease trade transactions. It eases it. So what I mean by easing it, it makes it smoother. It makes it, the allowance discussion, happens more smoothly. What I mean by this, for example, if I now use a practical example, let's say like with Amazon, you place an order with Amazon and yes, Amazon takes your money, but now you realize, oh, you know what? I want to cancel this order. I don't want the product anymore. I want a refund. And then Amazon tells me they don't have a refund policy. And now you are stuck there, but they allow you to cancel the order, but they don't allow you to be able to be refunded for your money. So allowing you to have a little bit of a frustration as a consumer, because then you would obviously go on to the online rating services and say this particular platform is untrustworthy and dishonest because they allow me to cancel an order, but they don't allow me to apply for a refund to get my money back. These obviously show to you that there are restraints or constraints on the particular aspect of interacting with a commerce platform. Even as a consumer, you would see this because that's also the manifestations of trade. When we get into the other particular notion of economic convergence, this is where countries or a lot of countries around trade agreements and common commercial policies are actually aligning themselves ever more. We see this in a Namibian context, specifically in the green energy transition discussion, which ultimately has come through with a lot of particular convergence mechanisms between Namibia and various trading partners, specifically like with the EU. There is convergence taking place. There is. With the African continent and the European continent, there is convergence taking place. So now the scenario is ultimately also the last one, the increase in intermediate goods trade in the context of global production chains, outsourcing and offshoring. This ultimately facilitates all these particular things because now you get as Donald Trump has said, that a 11-year-old girl from the United States doesn't need 30 dolls anymore. She can just have 2 or 3. I don't know who made him the authority on deciding how many dolls you need, but yeah. These are some of the particular developments. Now, between 1958 to 1988, income growth explained 67% of the real growth of world trade. Income growth explained 67% of real growth of world trade. While tariff reductions accounted for about 26% and transport cost reductions roughly about 8%. So when there is tariff reductions, you see real growth taking place in trade between two countries. You see exponential growth flare up between two destinations. However, developed and developing economies might face different economic characteristics, which is true, and these ultimately play different roles in the growth of international trade. Low-income economies tend to have a high reliance on the trade of resources and low added value goods, Namibia. Intermediate income economies are oriented around manufacturing, and high-income economies tend to be net importers of products and services. The ongoing growth of international trade also impacts firms, many of which expanded to become multinational corporations. The benefits that multinational corporations derive from trade vary, obviously. In some cases, it is competition because seeking new resources, markets, and processes in international markets increases the competitiveness of corporations. Economies of scale, international markets allow firms to produce larger quantities of goods, which enables lower unit costs. And finally, it drives innovation. International markets incite the development of new products or the adaptation of existing products to different market characteristics, conditions, as well as also demand factors. Now, why I say demand factors is one day I watched the famous car review program known as Top Gear, when it was still done by Jeremy Clarkson, James May, and Richard Hammond, obviously before Jeremy Clarkson's particular infamous incident that happened at the hotel with one of the show's producers. They sat down for one of the particular reviews that they had of a specific car. Now, this was about 2010-ish, one of those seasons. Because, I mean, they did like 22 seasons, of which they probably did like 17 seasons together. And Clarkson, Jeremy Clarkson, sat down and they were doing the review of the Chevrolet Ute. If you don't know what the Chevrolet Ute is, not the small Bucky that was sold here. The other one, the one that comes out with a V8 engine sometimes, and they had once had a V6 engine at the one time. They were doing this particular review of this General Motors Chevrolet product, and the innovation factor was based upon, in that discussion, a demand factor. So, in the 1960s or the 1950s, Chevrolet was in Australia. The wife of a farmer wrote a letter to the company head of Chevrolet or General Motors Australia at that time. And this is just a story I am carrying over to you from a story that was obviously told on the show at that time. The wife of a farmer wrote a letter to the head of Chevrolet Australia at the time, and she asked him, can't they make a car that has the ability to transport the goods for farmers in that regard, but also be enough of a car that it doesn't look like the conventional pickups that they were used to? And if you guys know what kind of a pickup Chevrolet used to make, as well as also Ford back then, they used to have those massive Buckies, those massive V8, V6 driven or powered things. And if you look at the size of and the scale of that particular product, you can obviously see it's a pretty demanding car to drive. Now, that was one of the concerns, obviously, that this lady wrote the letter about. And she's highlighted, can't they make something that is a go-between? It's a utility car, but it's not so big and not so heavy as well, but low enough and you can still do your particular demands. And thus, this particular car was developed, known as the Chevy Ute. From that, clear demand was developed. Clear demand was used as an innovation tactic to develop a completely different product. Not a hybrid product, mixing two existing products into making one. No, a completely new product, because there's a completely new branch of demand that kicked off. What this ultimately should highlight to you, dear listeners, is international trade ultimately does lead to innovation. It does. It does. That was how Marco Polo was actually able to bring pasta to Europe. He brought the technology of making pasta to Europe. And remember, all that the Europeans wanted to find, they wanted to find access to India because of the spice trade. They wanted spice. Spice and other particular textile products, but they wanted spice. And they wanted to have large quantities of it because they wanted to trade like crazy. Now, before we continue to list this, we're quickly going to take a short break. From the break, obviously, we'll be getting into the last particular 15 minutes of today's program. And on that note, we'll be back right after this.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is EagleFM.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the EagleFM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the EagleFM app to tune into live EagleFM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. EagleFM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Audio mnangeshefa noahara kushivifa oma kuroyo kupitira muhoriki radio station ayo Eagle FM enyamukuru olongaha ninge kwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahita tuimwe heali imwe ne heali imwe imwe nohamano. That is 0817147116 mamberewa konorahita tu natu mbali oheta tu vatatu ne nola no natu ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo mone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low. Because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Don't stop what the time do. Love is in another life, let me remind you. Look back, see me behind you. When it feels good, you don't have to try to. And if you say so, if you say so, then let's go. I know you're all that I want is in to match you. What do I gotta do to get you? Girl, go ahead and leave the keys on the dresser. You ain't gonna need them tonight. You're hotter than the desert, no need, no pressure. I just wanna make you feel right. And if you say so, if you say so, then let's go. I know you're all that I want is in to match you.
And we come back now from the sounds of the Empire of the Sun with the song Television. And that ultimately leaves us with about like 8 minutes left of this morning's programming towards the top of the hour at 7 a.m. And I do see that the first rays of light are coming out. If you're just waking up, good morning. And ultimately, you know, welcome to what would be probably the end of my Sunday morning take on the Sunday morning session. But nonetheless, there's obviously still a lot of more programming here on Eagle FM that you can still tune into for the rest of your Sundays. Just where we left off, as specifically as our conclusionary remarks specifically have been, that when you've got a look at the aspects of maritime trade, dear listeners, they have played a critical role in connecting not just societies, but ultimately also resources and means of production with each other. That obviously also means that it's not just about producing, but ultimately also about shipping and selling the necessary commodities, goods, as well as also the services associated to them to the relevant particular markets where the consumption has to occur. Now, as international trade obviously depends on the provision of distribution and transactional services, the demand for these services have also increased substantially, leading to the growth of carriers, cargo owners, terminal operators, third-party logistics service providers, freight forwarders, and insurers. International transportation and transaction service providers form a complex ecosystem that aims to support international trade and extract added value. Transportation service providers, like manufacturing firms, have become large multinational corporations due to the extensive markets that they've got to cover. And the nature of what is being traded and the main traders involved influence the modes of transportation used for international transportation. This being that maritime transportation dominates, accounting for approximately 80% of the volume and 70% of the value of international trade. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end of our discussion for this morning. We step into another musical break, which ultimately will bring us towards the end of my Sunday morning take on the Sunday morning session at the top of the hour before we cross over to the next program after that.
I am ready for the rapture. I am reaching for the light. But my heart screams hallelujah when I hear your battle cry. I know we're so young, but I swear you're the one for me. I knew it right from the start. You're some kind of heaven. That's all that I need. I found it in you. I found it in you. You're some kind of heaven. That's all that I need. I found it in you. You're too good to be true. You got me singing, baby. I don't need hell to make me scared of love. I don't need a symphony to sing my song. Cause there's a choir of angels deep inside my lungs. And I can
need lightning fast internet? Piratas has you covered. The network Namibia relies on. Whether for business or pleasure, Piratas' cutting-edge technology ensures both reliable and speedy internet connectivity. We exist to serve your needs through our high-quality network and pride ourselves in offering client service excellence. Connect to Piratas today. Visit us online at piratas.africa/Namibia or call us on 083-300-1000.
Up to the end of this morning's session of my Sunday Morning Take. Dear listeners, that were the sounds of the Hurts with the song Some Kind of Heaven. And ultimately, it's just about 3 minutes past the top of the hour at of seven, basically. And once again, welcoming you to this particular Sunday morning session here in your, in the company of us, Eagle FM. If you're just waking up or just tuning in, good morning. And obviously, I do hope that you've got a cup of warm brew in close proximity to you. Ultimately, on that note, let's see each other again during the course of this week, as usual, on the Home Run, where it's going to be me and Helmut ultimately giving you some of the particular lowdowns and insightful discussions around the developments locally, regionally, continentally, and internationally in that regard. Stay tuned for the next program to come after the break.
We'll see each other again, same time, same place next week, here on my Sunday Morning Take.